Hi, this is John Gomez of Gomez Trial Attorneys with another episode of Trial Files. In Trial Files, we talk to real personal injury survivors and their real personal injury lawyers. In this episode, we have a special treat. We have Chris and Robin DeRoover, who are joining us all the way from Ann Arbor, Michigan. Their case involved, and we'll learn about it, an injury to their daughter while the whole family was here in San Diego. We also have with us Jessica Sizemore, a partner at Gomez Trial Attorneys, who, along with myself, represented the DeRoover family at trial. And so, Chris and Robin, thanks so much for joining us. And so, as we talked about before, kind of the first thing is we have you sort of describe what happened. And so let's start with you, Robin. And I know sometimes you get a bit emotional, but just generally for our listeners, you know, what happened to you and your family on that trip out here to San Diego?
We were out in San Diego for my husband's work conference and also extended our time so that we could have a vacation. And we went to breakfast on our last morning there. And I left the table. We had our nanny with us, and there was a couple of things that happened, you know, asked to move some things, and I had to go to the bathroom and rinse off a tray that our 9-month-old was going to eat off of. But our nanny was at the table with the kids, and then while I was in the bathroom rinsing off the tray, I heard my daughter scream in agony, and my first thought was that she fell. But when I met the nanny in the hallway after running away from the sink, she told me it was hot coffee. So a pitcher of hot coffee had been put in front of our 9-month-old, and she pulled it down on herself and suffered third degree full thickness burns. So we were away from home and, you know, at the mercy of everyone there, sort of thing.
Yeah, that's just a terrible, you know, story for us to think about. And for our listeners, you have background as a nurse, right? And so, as I recall, you kind of are handed your daughter and are the one in charge of rendering immediate sort of first aid and medical assistance.
Well, yeah. And like when I took her clothes off in my head, because I was a burn nurse for a while. And then my current role as a nurse anesthetist, I do anesthesia for people having burn dressing procedures and stuff like that. I just knew her life was forever changed. Like, you know, she was going to be, our lives were forever changed, really. But like, really, I was looking at this perfect baby, and I just said in my mind, I was like, I cannot believe that her life is now forever changed from someone's split second decision.
And Chris, so this event occurred at the Omni Hotel Resort in Carlsbad, California. And so fill us in, who else is at the table, you know, with you prior to this happening?
Our son, Zachary, who had just turned 3 the day we flew to California, and our son, Nate, who at the time was 5 years old. And, you know, I had stepped away from the table to park a stroller, and, you know, the waiter brought the unordered carafe of coffee. He was distracted, sat it down in front of a 9-month-old baby in a high chair and walked away.
And so did you hear the scream too, Chris?
Yeah, because I was less than 20 feet away when it happened.
And so what happens in the sort of immediate aftermath? I know that Robin tries to help out Hadley in the bathroom, and kind of what goes on from there? Your whole family is far away from home. You got, you know, small children. You've got this crazy medical emergency and crisis. What's going on over the next couple of days?
You know, it's just trying to, we had to figure out a way that we could get our boys home. We thought we were going to have to be out in California for several weeks. We're trying to navigate getting out of a hotel, getting my boys on an airplane, arranging for their travel and care, trying to pack everything, trying to run back and forth from the hospital. Robin's in the hospital with Hadley at the San Diego burn unit, and just trying to manage our children's, I guess, like what's going on with them emotionally, because all of a sudden, you know, mommy left the table to go wash off this placemat, and then they never saw mommy again. They saw their sister get burned. So just trying to, I guess, hold it together.
Right. And so remind us, your oldest boy was 5 at the time and your youngest was 3. Is that right?
Yep. And he had just turned 3. They sang happy birthday to him on the plane on the way to California.
Wow. And so I imagine, you know, the injuries to your infant daughter are manifest, but I imagine the boys were having some struggles too, as you've related to us.
Yeah, that was the longest they'd ever not been with their mommy before. You know, suddenly mommy, you know, she didn't have a chance to say goodbye. She was gone.
And so at some point, Hadley gets back out to Ann Arbor, where you're fortunate enough, Robin, to know doctors at the University of Michigan Medical Center, including one of the most fantastic burn surgeons and doctors that I've ever come across. So tell us about her coming back to Ann Arbor and his care for her.
Yeah, so one of the complicated things with a burn injury is, like, so Hadley was burned on a Saturday, and they at first tried, you know, they said, oh, it's second degree, that's what it looks like. But burns don't fully, like, cause injury for, it's like up to 72 to 96 hours. So we sat in the hospital, you know, with her wrapped in her dressings in wonder of, like, what's the future hold here? What is she going to have to have? Because if it's third degree, they have to get grafted. And so Monday, you know, they take the dressings down and look at her, and it's full thickness. So all the way through all of the layers of her skin. And at that point, we just knew, my husband and I, we just said, we can't stay here. We need our support system. You know, I work at the University of Michigan Hospital, and we have friends that were in pediatrics. And so we reached out to them and got, you know, the name of an amazing surgeon, and also the number, so that we were able to, like, connect with him on the phone, which is a huge blessing to be able to do that. And then we just made arrangements to, you know, safely fly back with a very injured daughter. You know, we prayed a lot, and we got on a plane, and we took a red eye home. We went directly to the burn unit at the University of Michigan and were admitted directly, so we didn't have to go through the emergency room. And it was just because I knew that those were some options that I knew that I didn't want to have to worry about going to an ER and doing that whole process, you know. So my medical experience was able to help my daughter, you know, ultimately get, like, more timely care, and also just less, you know, less time of sitting around waiting to talk to people. So, you know, we met with the doctors. We got there at 6, 7 in the morning. And so it was perfect timing in, like, the medical world, because that's when their day starts and they do what's called rounds. So they were able to basically round on Hadley right away, share her story with the burn team. They had arrangements for, you know, the first burn dressing to be placed, an IV to be placed. You know, my friend from pediatric anesthesiology came over and physically put her first IV in, which was amazing because she's a baby and it's scary for them. So, you know, all of that care that was given to us was just priceless. And then, you know, they were able to take her to the dressing change area and, like, see her injuries and her wounds, and to assess it for themselves. She got a feeding too, because there was a lot of stuff that needs to happen. You know, it's like, there's a lot of things that a bad burn need, you know, the metabolic needs of a bad burn are to a little baby. I mean, she was not even 20 pounds. So I think she weighed 18 pounds when it happened. So, you know, they're small, and she needed a lot of nutrition.
Sure. And then over time, Hadley did have to undergo various surgical procedures, including grafting and revisions and all sorts of other things that would be traumatic and difficult for anyone, let alone a small child. And so I imagine, Chris, that, you know, during this time, the Omni Hotel reaches out to you. And as I understand it, you were there as part of a work conference and says, you know, we are so sorry for what we did to your daughter. You know, what on earth can we do to make it up for you? You know, we, of course, will pay for all of her medical care and all of her pain and suffering, disfigurement, and for all the things that your family went through. We're so sorry. And so I imagine that's exactly what Omni did, right, Chris?
Completely the opposite. They treated us horribly the entire time. They never apologized. Even checking out of the hotel, to as simple as, you know, I wasn't going to be there as, and my wife isn't going to be there to like help carry bags. And so we needed boxes. And so when I asked them to help me with boxes, they recommended that I go to the dumpster. I needed to print out a shipping label from UPS and I asked to use the concierge computer. They wouldn't even let me do that. They sent me down to their business office room where I had to, you know, pay for that service. There was no care, no compassion, no empathy, no sympathy, no anything. While we were at the hospital in Ann Arbor, we received a call from their insurance company. They were incredibly rude, disrespectful, showed no care, no remorse, just like they're horrible people. So your reasoning and what should have been done would have been a normal human response of a normal, acceptable human being. But that's not what they did at all.
And so, you know, once you're met with this response, I imagine at some point you as a family decide, look, you know, maybe we should consider seeking legal representation to help us. So maybe you could walk us through that process for the benefit of other personal injury survivors. You know, when was it that you decided to look for a lawyer? And then how did you go about finding one?
Yeah, we waited several months because, you know, our first concern is our child and then also our other two children. I mean, that was our first concern, was just protecting our family and getting our family through this. I mean, you know, Hadley had multiple surgeries. In total now, I think she's had 16 different surgeries. So it wasn't something we did immediately. We waited some time, talked to a local attorney here on the ground in Ann Arbor. He started reaching out to different friends from law school that had connections in California, contacted a lawyer friend in Chicago, and everyone we talked to referred us to you.
I did a Google search and found your, it's kind of funny how it all worked out because he was on Chris's end. He was getting, you know, they were suggesting the Gomez trial attorneys. And then when I Googled and was looking at different attorneys and like watching video, like ad videos and things like that, I was drawn to you. And I just said, this seems like someone who cares and that's who we want to represent us.
Well, I sure am glad that you ended up picking us. I sure remember the first time that we met and I started learning more about the case and your family. And so I wanted to ask Jessica, you know, who was very intimately involved in working up the case and the trial and is another lawyer here, a partner at the firm. Jessica, what did you think about the case, you know, when you first heard about it? And then tell us about when you first met the DeRuver family.
When I first heard about the case, obviously you're struck by this issue of you've got a 9-month-old who's been severely burned. So that's obviously the first thing you're going to think about is just how awful for this family and, you know, what they've gone through. Excuse me. What they've gone through must be horrific. Obviously, though, then you get this issue of tort reformers and hot coffee cases and all those things. So, of course, those things, you know, run through your mind is, you know, how is that case going to play out in front of a jury and things like that. You know, obviously, I thought about those things before I met the family. But the story, I think, was compelling about how it happened, and it definitely struck me as something that should not have happened. It was a preventable accident, I think. And so, you know, we flew over to Michigan, I think you and I did, and met with the DeRuvers, immediately struck by this is just a core family. That's what they're about at their core, and they made us feel like family. And they were so profoundly affected by what happened, I remember. One of the very first things was Chris and kind of going to the house, and there's this question of would you like coffee? Would you like coffee? You know, as people do when you kind of walk into somebody's home. And, you know, Chris to this day, as far as I understand, still can't really be around coffee, and the smell of it really has a visceral reaction to him. And, you know, so I think that struck me right away as this family, you know, not only Hadley, but the whole family is still so profoundly affected by this. And then I was just very struck by, at the end of the day, all these parents wanted was justice for Hadley. And it was really about getting their story out there and preventing this from happening to anybody else. I don't know how many conversations I've had with them throughout this litigation where that's been the focus is I never want this to happen to another child. And so, you know, you get the feeling at the very beginning that they're just wonderful people who really just want justice.
I agree. And so we often say the most important, you know, part of a case is, you know, who has the case. And we would say that you guys, the DeRuver families, were A-plus clients, just the absolute best, salt of the earth, just a solid, wonderful family. But in this case, you're talking about liability. You know, there were two very, very different stories. One told by your nanny, Brittany, who was your nanny at the time. And she basically says that she's got her back turned, helping out little Zach. And this waiter just carelessly puts the coffee down in front of Hadley. And the waiter, who claims that Brittany ordered the coffee and, you know, must have pushed it in front of Hadley, and that the waiter warned Brittany about it, you know, 3 or 4 times. But, you know, Brittany was quite insistent upon the waiter placing the coffee on the table despite the presence of the young children. And so, you know, I remember meeting with Brittany at first and kind of getting her story and getting to know her. And so tell us... let's say Robin, speak to us a little bit about, you know, the aftermath with Brittany, because it affected her too, to the point where, you know, you all didn't have a whole lot of communication with her for some period of time after this event. And, you know, one reading of the tea leaves or those events could be that you guys were blaming her, and that, you know, could have supported the Omni's argument. But, you know, once we actually talked to you guys, it was quite clear, you know, that you supported her and believed her. And so talk to us a little bit, Robin, if you would, about how this affected Brittany and her relationship, you know, with your family. And you know, at some point you were all here in San Diego in trial together. You know, how that kind of the Brittany story kind of came to an end for you guys.
Yeah. You know, I mean, she obviously was the one that was there when it happened. And, you know, then you know, Hadley's burned and we are taken off in an ambulance to the hospital. And then it was just texting back and forth a little bit. And I mean, I had texted her saying, oh, it's not your fault. Like, I know it's not your fault. But she's a young girl. She was, I think, 19 or 20 when it happened. And she placed blame on herself. So in the aftermath of, you know, through Hadley's surgeries, and I was in the midst of crisis mode and I wasn't able to text a lot and pay attention to other people's emotions. You know, I was dealing with a child who had severe, you know, she was in a severe trauma state. And so, you know, we were in survival mode. And I think some of that was hard for Brittany to process because she didn't get a lot of feedback from me. And, you know, now looking back and now the conversations that we've had with her, you know, she does say, like, I felt at fault and I didn't know what to do. Those were her words, because basically what ended up happening was she just retreated from us and didn't take any communication. Like, there was, you know, she blocked our phone calls and on Facebook, unfriended, you know, things like that, to where then I was feeling pushed aside by someone who I cared about a lot and I thought cared about us, you know? So in this time of crisis, I was going, how can she leave us? But really what it was that her internal struggle with, that is a lot for a young girl to go through, you know, to be a part of. It's a lot for anybody, you know, I'm a 40-year-old person who, it was a lot. I mean, it was everything that we could just to get through each day, you know? I mean, it was from sun up to sundown. I mean, it was hard, and it's an emotional struggle. So, you know, for us, and we ended up reconnecting through the whole trial situation because, you know, obviously she was there and she was a witness. And then, you know, we got to see each other when we were part of things and sort of mend that relationship. And we invited her over before everything, you know, but for her, it was painful. I mean, I remember the first day her coming over to our house after, you know, Hadley was burned, and in an innocent thing of Hadley had been at dance class and we were in the basement playing and she had her leotard on and she pee-peed in her leotard because she was newly potty trained, you know, because she was 2 at that point. You know, she takes her clothes off and I went to go upstairs to get her a new underwear, a new outfit. And so Brittany was alone with Hadley and seeing her scars, and she just lost it because it's a reality, you know, when you see it in person. And I think that that's a lot for anyone.
Sure. And thank you, you know, for talking about that, because, you know, that was an unusual part of the trial. You know, we don't always have a nanny who's going to play such a central role in the injury of a child and in the eventual trial of the injury of that child. But we had another very unique thing in this case. I've never seen it before. And that is that one of our most important witnesses to the factual events that gave rise to the spilled coffee was a young man of only 7 years of age at the time of this event. And so, Chris, is that right? No, five.
He was five.
I think 7 when he testified. Jessica was kind of shaking her head no, but and so he's 5 years old. And so, Chris, you were kind of his, you related to me, you know, what he had told you guys many times. And so talk to us about young Nate and his recollection of this event and why he told you he remembered it so well.
Yeah, Nate, he was 5 when it happened, 7 when he went through the deposition, and then he was 8 at trial. You know, he always told the same story. We really never tried to talk to him like about what happened. Cause we just, you know, it's not like we were like, you know, asking him to tell us every day. I mean, you know, he would tell us and then he would tell you, and then, you know, he had to tell a story in court. I mean, and, you know, him going through that process, you know, even when he was asked, how do you remember? And it was because of that movie called Inside Out, where he learned about core memories. And he said it's a core memory, and that's just something that, sorry, He'll just never forget it.
Well, me neither. He was an absolute star. And, you know, that's an interesting balance that we have to play with the witness that young, because we've heard about the suggestibility of, you know, witnesses like that. We hear about that from cases, criminal cases mainly involving abuse or things at daycares. And, you know, social workers will talk to these kids and essentially implant an idea into their mind. So I think we struck the right balance with him. You know, we reassured him that it was proper to tell the truth. And, you know, we probably only had him tell his story a handful of times at most. But, you know, at the time, I will never forget. I'm going to ask Jessica's sort of impressions in this moment. But I will just never forget that kid. We call him up, and the kid has a full suit on. And he's got like perfect posture, dress shoes, you know, with this red hair. And he just like shoulders back, just marches up to the stand like the kid owned the courtroom. And I've never in my life seen anything like that. And I was like, at that moment, I go, we're going to win this thing. And so.
Well, remember, too, he grabbed the mic, he pulled it in and said, good morning.
I mean, that's what I mean. The kid stole the show. You know, what do you remember about that, Jessica?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was probably a really telling part of the verdict for the jury. I think, you know, you have an eyewitness who saw the whole thing and very vividly had a memory of it. And it wasn't so much detail that it seemed like there was no credibility to it. It was just exactly what somebody would remember. And he was so sure and just so positive of what he had seen, that there was just really no way you could argue about it. I mean, I think if defense had tried to even question the credibility of his memories, they would have just completely sunk themselves. But I think at the end of the day, when you have a very credible witness who no doubt in his mind saw what happened, there really was no longer this he said, she said issue.
Yes, and I remember his reference to core memories and how this was a core memory for him and how it had affected him ever since. And we talked about that at trial. And so, you know, going into the trial, just for reference point for our listeners, the Omni had offered exactly 0 cents. That is $0.00. This was a no offer trial, or a no-offer case that we tried. Were you surprised by that, Jessica, that they had not offered even a nickel to this family?
I was. You know, I think because I had been involved with the workup of the case, and I had seen I took the waiter's deposition. He was very inconsistent in my mind when I took his deposition. He contradicted himself even in his deposition. And so I just felt like assessing the credibility versus the credibility of the DeRuver family, I would think that they would understand they had a problem there. I am actually pretty surprised that they never made an offer on the case, but it all worked out in the end, and I'm glad that they didn't, because it gave the DeRuver family the ability to tell their story.
Yeah, I was pretty shocked myself, you know, but you're right. It made the decision easy. And so, you know, Chris and Robin, you have to trek your whole family out here. Plus, was there a baby at trial?
Yeah.
So yes. You had Mila as well. So you had 1, 2, 3, 4 children out here for trial, you know, plus you guys out in San Diego. So who talked last? I think Chris talked last. So Robin, just talk to us about, you know, the overall experience of coming out for trial and maybe you testifying and seeing, you know, your husband testify and your son testify. How was that whole experience for you?
It was stressful. I think we were always moving through, like when you decide on a litigation sort of thing, right? It was like there was always a fear about trial, but we're people of faith and we believe in God, and we kind of just knew that God was just going to like have his hand over the whole thing and guide it to where it should be. And we ended up at trial. And so we were lucky enough, you know, to be able to take our whole family out to San Diego, and we, you know, researched hotels and figured out the best place to stay, and then brought my parents with us too, so that we would have childcare options that we were comfortable with. And then, you know, I mean, it was definitely an anxiety producing thing for me. So as you're moving, you know, towards the trial, there was a lot of, because I've never been through it before and I didn't know what to expect. And, you know, when you haven't been through something before, it's scary. And so, you know, that first day, I just remember being full of adrenaline and walking to the court, all of us together, you know, my boys, and I'm holding a baby in a baby carrier and then holding Hadley's hand and she's walking or being strolled in. And we're all together and we go in and we sit there and we're listening to it all go down. And I mean, watching my son go up on the stand it's a pivotal moment in my life that I will never forget. I mean, he not only made us proud, but you know, it's just, he's a kid and I don't know. And he stood up for his sister and he told her story. And he was honorable and true. And that's the only thing that you can feel is pride in that situation. And for myself, I was on the stand for, I think, what, Jessica, was it 5 hours or almost 5.5?
I mean, yeah, I think that's right.
For me, it was, although I was so nervous and scared before, afterwards I looked back and I just felt this just gratitude of being able to tell Hadley's story, because, you know, I was the one with her. I mean, our whole family was together, but I mean, her and I were connected, literally connected. You know, I was holding her the entire time she was in the hospital, almost the entire time when we first came home because she couldn't sleep without me. You know, I mean, just things that, and the fear and the pain and everything that I saw in her eyes when I had to change dressings, and to be able to share that in front of a group of people, even though it was emotional and it was hard, it was important to be able to do.
Well, you did a great job. Thank you. And so, Jessica, I was going to ask you, you have an unusual circumstance here. You have a mom who has the medical background to know exactly what her daughter is going through and will go through. And so how did you walk that tightrope of preparing her to testify at trial as both a nurse that has been involved with these kinds of injuries and treatment and as a mom?
Yeah, I think that was an interesting aspect of this trial too, was having someone uniquely qualified to talk about Hadley's injuries, who, you know, wasn't somebody we had to subpoena from a hospital or fly in from the University of Michigan. And so, you know, it struck me talking to Robin, you know, throughout the litigation, how much she really was there and intimately involved in Hadley's care. And I think that we were able to somewhat use her as a de facto expert on the stand and really able to get into the nitty gritty of what these dressing changes really were in reality, and all of the different procedures that Hadley had to go through and walk through that from both a mother's perspective and a nurse's perspective. And so I think she was able to give both the clinical side of it and the motherly side of it. And it was really compelling to the jury. You know, Robin mentioned that she was on the stand for 5.5 hours. We purposely kind of put her on for a very long time because she was able to make medical testimony not dry. You know, she was able to take this very extended medical history of what Hadley had gone through and give some humanity to it. So the jury was really just clinging to every word that she had to say, but with so much authority because she is a nurse and a nurse who is intimately familiar with burn victims. And so I think she did an incredible job of just illustrating how painful this injury was and how hard it was on everyone, every one of the family members, and then kind of what Hadley's going to have to expect in the future, which is something we were able to get from her. And then when we had our burn expert, Dr. Levy, on, he kind of reiterated everything that Robin had to say. So, again, it lends credibility to the family.
Thank you. And so, Chris, you know, from your perspective and from where you were sitting, you know, what was it like for you to come out, you know, with your whole family and be out here for a couple weeks in trial and for you to testify?
I mean, the whole experience, I mean, was stressful from a worried about my family standpoint and how they were going to do emotionally with it. I mean, especially Nate, after he went through deposition, he didn't sleep well for several days because he was just upset by the whole process because he had to talk about it again. So then we intentionally didn't talk about it again until trial, just because of his emotions. Sitting there in the courtroom was extremely difficult listening to you know, the Omni's lawyers lie about our family, and the things that they said were awful. And sitting there through that, I mean, I got super angry, super annoyed. You know, you guys had to keep reminding me, just be dad, you know? Okay, do your job, be the dad, you know, and it's, you know, then, you know, watching Robin, I mean, you know, I mean, she did an amazing job, you know, just so special. I mean, the gifts that she brings to our family, and seeing Nate up there, I mean, that was a very proud dad moment. So it's just such a brave kid.
Yeah, you did great.
Yeah, just seeing his confidence, you know, I thank, you know, USA Swimming for, you know, playing soccer, playing hockey. I mean, all of just, you know, his confidence as a kid, you know, his school, his faith, all that. You know, and it's the first time we had been together as a family out there since it had happened. And I had done the majority of the trips out to San Diego for some meetings with you guys and the federal magistrate, and you know, they hadn't come out for any of that. So it was our first time back in San Diego, and our first time back at the zoo, you know, even since we had been out there when Hadley was hurt. So just lots of memories, and it was hard to get through. And then at the point where my family didn't have to be out there anymore, then they all flew home, and then I stayed out there for the end of it. So,
yeah, I wasn't even there to watch him on the stand because we needed to get the kids back to school. And so I flew back with the kids and my parents, and then Chris stayed out there. So I missed Chris's testimony and Levy's testimony, and you know, I missed a lot of it. So that was hard. I remember feeling very like torn because, you know, I need to get my kids back to some semblance of normal because we couldn't just, we couldn't stay out there for the duration. It was just, it wasn't, you know, parentally responsible to take them out of school for that long sort of thing, you know?
Sure.
So, yeah. So it was hard to be away and not be able to hear it all, but you know, you guys did a good job updating me. And
Well, Chris, you got to hear it all. So you got to actually go to court on the day that we learned they had a verdict. And so you get a unanimous verdict, which is required in federal court, and they award a bit over $6 million to your family. And so, you know, I want to ask just you, you know, after going through all this and the stress and them, you know, lying about you and not offering you any money and saying mean things, like, how does it feel, you know, essentially to hear that from a jury?
I mean, it felt I felt at peace, knowing that they, you know, supported Hadley and took care of her. They did the right thing. I felt at peace knowing that the Omni lost, and they deserve to lose. It never should have gone to trial, but that's, you know, but I'm looking back, I'm happy that it went to trial. I'm happy that we got to tell our story. I'm happy that we just went through the process. You know, I want Hadley to know someday that we fought.
And what about you, Robin? How did you learn that you had ended up winning?
I think you guys, I can't remember if you texted me or if Chris called me or if there was, you know, I forget how it happened. I mean, it must have been a call. I was just, because I can't remember if I was even at work. I might have been at work that day and not able, I'm in the operating room when I'm at work. So I was like not able to get calls. So, I mean, it was definitely like, it was relief, you know, for going through something. Just the whole litigation process itself is a whole other can of worms other than the injury of your child. So for me, I felt like it was like, we can close the door somewhat, because then it was like, now looking back, I'm like, oh, then there was like so much more after the fact of trying to actually get them to pay. So, you know, there's those whole things, but being able to close a chapter of things and move on, that felt good.
Yeah. My experience, you know, having a favorable jury verdict is always very helpful to an injury survivor in terms of, you know, one, feeling heard by the community, and two, sort of moving on to the next chapter of healing.
Yeah.
And so I think your experience is consistent with what I've seen. And so, you know, here we are today, and you referenced trying to get them to pay. Eventually they did pay, you know, after the verdict. You know, we engaged in negotiations, reached a settlement eventually. And so, so the case is done. And so, you know, how is the family doing? How are the boys? How's Hadley? How's Mila? How are you guys? You know, what report would you give, Robin? How's the family doing?
I'd say we're doing great. You know, we're enjoying life. We are doing fun things. I think for us as a family, as parents, we tried to keep it as non, you know, of an issue. Like the kids weren't emerged into it. We didn't tell them, oh, the jury finally paid, you know, or the Omni finally paid. You know, we didn't even talk about that stuff with them. They just know. I think for like Chris and I, and moving forward with Hadley, like we have a sense of peace about, okay, if she does need surgery, if she does need something, we, you know, she has a financial security blanket of being able to pay for it, you know, and it's a big financial security blanket. So, I mean, it's like she's taken care of. You know, the boys each got a settlement. So we've tried to do our best with, you know, investing it properly and like, you know, looking towards the future. I think we're trying to just be positive. I think now we still, cause we'll always be dealing with Hadley's injuries, you know, and I pray every day that I'm able to give her, you know, the confidence and the security to not hate her body and her scars, but rather embrace them. And, you know, she's a almost 5-year-old little girl who loves wearing her bikini despite her scars on her tummy and her scars on her legs. And she's out there living her life just to the utmost. You know, she's full of personality.
She is. Yeah, she recently sent me a happy birthday video. I was very pleased to get that. And so, yeah, she's a hoot. And so, how would you say everybody's doing, Chris?
Yeah, I'd say everyone's doing well. I mean, like Robin was saying, we try to make the whole trial issue and Hadley's injuries kind of a non issue for everyone where we weren't talking about it all the time and dwelling on it all the time. We're just trying to, you know, we want you know, her scars and everything to be a non-issue for her. So we're not like directing attention to it all the time. We have to do a lot of education with our friends and their children about her scars. And so to help continue to make it a non-issue. And I think it's just it's a good life lesson for people to be able to treat people that look differently than yourself the same.
100%. And so, you know, finally to kind of close out, you know, Robin, this podcast is intended for other personal injury survivors, you know, maybe families going through things like what your family went through. What advice would you give to other, you know, folks in situations like yours? What is the best piece of advice you could give them?
I think the best piece of advice would be, even though it feels scary and even though it feels unknown and even though it feels daunting, because it, looking back, it's a lengthy process. It takes a lot of, you know, diligence and time and money even, but it will work out if you are, if it's your truth to share, you know, if it's your truth, then you should stand by it and you go for it. And, you know, for us, we couldn't have asked for a better group of attorneys to support us throughout the way. I mean, like, we really were able to rely on you and trust you and know that you had our best interest. And that's, I think, the biggest key when you're moving forward in a trial situation, or, you know, when you're thinking about it, you have to be able to trust the people that you're working with.
I totally agree. But thank you for those kind words about us. It was a real privilege. I know Jessica and our whole team feels the same. So, Chris, what advice would you give?
I mean, just trust the process. Stay true to yourself. Trust your lawyers, even when they tell you just be dad. yeah, take the advice.
Yeah. Well, you were coachable. You're very coachable.
Yeah.
In a good way.
Yeah, it takes a little bit of time with me, but yes. I mean, just as a whole, I mean, you know, you have your truth, you've got to believe in it, and other people will believe it too. You know, the lesson you learn as a kid, I mean, it's, if you tell the truth, it's always the same. You know, and you know, when people lie, I mean, the story changes constantly. And so you just, you know your truth, tell your truth, trust in the process, and, you know, just keep believing.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys. I really appreciate you spending time with us. I know you guys are busy with that big family and work and everything else going on. So, and it's always a treat to reconnect with you guys. We think so highly of you, and really, really enjoyed working with you on your case. And
yes, forever friends.
100%. Yes. And, you know, and you've been kind enough to host some of us out there at Michigan athletic events. And so, yeah, you guys are absolutely friends and family for life. And so thank you. And so, guys, this concludes another episode of Trial Files, where real personal injury survivors talk to their real personal injury lawyers here at Gomez Trial Attorneys. Tune in next time as we continue to talk to folks that have been through this process to hopefully provide information and guidance to those looking at this as survivors themselves. So thank you, everyone. Until next time, John Gomez, Gomez Trial Attorneys.